Good morning, everyone. This is Jane reading to you from the Times Republic of Iroquois County on a beautiful but chilly May 7th morning. There's a lovely article on the front page about weddings, since we're in wedding season coming up. And this is memorabilia from old weddings from days past. The headline, Wedding Display at Old Courthouse Museum. If you love vintage clothing, especially wedding apparel, then the Old Courthouse Museum at 103 West Cherry in Watsika is the place to visit. The first floor is filled with wedding apparel from the 1800s to the 1900s, along with many, many photos, marriage certificates, and accessories. These items have been donated to the museum over the years and were recently removed from the vault for displaying. As you enter the museum, there is a display case with several photos of married couples. These photos haven't been identified, so museum staff are seeking help from the visiting public to get names. Many of the gowns and accessories have identification tags on them with general information. Maybe there's someone you know. Here's a bit of information on some of the display items. There's a dress worn by Laverna Dibble when she married Roy Marshall in 1918, a groom's suit worn by Charles Waterstat when he married in 1901, the wedding dress of Janet Davidson for her 1844 marriage to Archibald Riddle. That's before the Civil War. Wow. Her marriage to Archibald Riddle, the wedding gown of Mary Jane Stark from her marriage to Dr. A.J. Day in 1957, a white wool dress made by Gertie Johnson for her 1910 marriage to William Wiertz, and the wedding dress of Helen Williams for her marriage to Harry Adams in 1992. A wedding dress worn by Mary Rose Blair for her 1942 marriage to Orby Kirby was also worn by her granddaughter, Sarah Howe, when she married. The olive green wedding dress of Elaine Schroeder for her marriage to Leroy Jurgens in 1974 features a matching purse and hat. Lillian Herman's wedding dress for her marriage to William Dryden in 1802 in Cisna Park is featured along with a photo of the bride and the couple's marriage certificate. In addition to the many photos of married couples who are not identified, there are several pictures throughout the display. Some of those include Russell T. Boyd and Anise A. Gillette, married on April 29, 1933, Adelia Bowman and Norman Groomer on their wedding day in 1922, Dina Jansen and Edward Menschel on their wedding day, January 30, 1910, Katie Osterhaus and Hay Ferdinand, married in 1910, Regina Schweiger and Dr. Ambrose Schneider on their wedding day in June 2, 1952, and the wedding photo of Eleanor and Heinrich Winkelmann, married March 10, 1924. The wedding veil of Sophia Lukey is displayed, as is a photo of her and her groom, John Conrad Wilkening, whom she married April 10, 1888. The marriage certificate of Cordelia Kalar and Elam Cobb is displayed. Their wedding date was June 4, 1890. There's a photo from 1925 of Dorothy Hull Bergman as a bride and a wedding invitation for the April 9, 1988 wedding of Lucy Adams and Randy DeFau. There are many, many items from weddings inside display cases. One very interesting fact you can garner from the displays is the size of the women. They must have been very petite. Some of the dresses displayed were too large for mannequins available and had to be tucked in the back. The footwear also reflects the small size of the women. A couple of the dresses were handmade, and one was purchased from Montgomery Ward. The general public is welcome to visit the museum during normal business hours of 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Monday through Friday, as well as 1 to 4 p.m. the first Sunday of each month. In addition to the wedding display, each room of the museum is filled with memorabilia, artifacts, and interesting items from yesteryear. The museum is open to tours, so any group, business, classroom, club, etc., interested in visiting the museum can call the office at 815-432-2215 during normal business hours. More of the museum can be seen on its Facebook page, Old Courthouse Museum, Watseka. The museum is managed by the Iroquois County Historical Society, a nonprofit organization. The group is responsible for the maintenance, repair, improvements, and upkeep of the 150-year-old building. Fundraisers are conducted throughout the year, and memberships are always welcome. Also on the front page today is a reminder of the annual Stamp Out Hunger food drive set for May 9th. That's this coming weekend. The annual Stamp Out Hunger food drive through the National Association of Letter Carriers will be May 9th. You may have already received your yellow bag from your letter carrier. People are invited to fill a bag with non-perishable food items and place it by their mailbox. The letter carrier will pick up and deliver to food banks and pantries in the local community. According to information from the association, the National Association of Letter Carriers has conducted the drive nationwide for more than 30 years. It is conducted in all 150 states, Puerto Rico, the U.S. Virgin Islands, and Guam. In that 30 years, more than 1.9 billion pounds of food has been collected. And if you work in kitchens or food pantries, you know that there seems to be a pressing need for this food right now, so be generous. Now some news from your local schools. Juvenile Justice Council announces winners of Teen Mental Health PSA contest. In preparation for Mental Health Awareness Month in May, the Juvenile Justice Council of Iroquois County recently hosted its third annual contest, inviting Iroquois County students to create a written 30-second public service announcement focused on the important topic of teen mental health. This year's contest was open to both junior high and senior high school students who could participate individually or as part of a team, class, or organization. According to information from the council, students were challenged to develop PSAs that promote mental health awareness, encourage positive decision-making, and inspire teens to connect with others and seek help when needed. Entries were due April 3rd. The submissions were especially powerful as they reflected the authentic voices and perspectives of youth speaking to their peers and parents about the challenges their generation faced today. A total of 71 entries were submitted, making the judging process especially competitive. Thanks to JJC members from Birth to Five, Harbor House Resale Shop, Iroquois Kankakee Regional Office of Education, Iroquois County Board, Iroquois County Probation Department, Iroquois County Public Health Department, Iroquois County Sheriff's Department, Iroquois County State's Attorney's Office, Iroquois Memorial Hospital, Iroquois Mental Health Center, the National Guard, WGFA Radio 94.1 FM, as well as parent representatives and student ambassadors for serving as impartial judges. This year's winners are Central High School, Haley Renolet, Cisna Park Junior High School, Kelsey Mall, Iroquois West High School, Aubrey Chandler, Iroquois West Middle School, Corbin Breen, Gavin Coleman, Easton Markley, Eli Matthews, Milford Grade School, Trenton Clyden, Easton Handy, and Hudson Mill. Milford High School, Owen Baker, Brady Broussard, and Avery Martinez. St. John's Lutheran School, Vera Vaughn, and Watseka High School, Aspen Edes, Addison Morris, and Betsy Newell. The winning PSA addressed a wide range The winning PSAs, plural, addressed a wide range of important topics, including stress and anxiety, depression, suicidal thoughts, substance abuse, bullying, coping strategies, and where to find help. Students had the opportunity to record their winning PSAs either at the WGFA radio station or through a mobile app. These messages will air frequently on WGFA 94.1 FM and The Buckle 96.9 FM throughout May in recognition of Mental Health Awareness Month. Beyond having their voices broadcast on the radio and making a meaningful impact on their community, contest winners were each honored with an award certificate and a collection of fun prizes, a family-sized bag of Ruffles potato chips, a nod to life's ups and downs, a can of mini Doritos for boldly stepping up and taking it to the next level, a bottle of Sprite for not bottling things up, but instead encouraging open, free-flowing conversations, and sunglasses. All 138 student participants, along with their 9 dedicated teachers, were recognized in a cosmic brownie to celebrate the sweetness they shared, and a rubber bracelet. Participating teachers were additionally given a pen, notepad, and a handwritten thank you. And again, news from the schools. 17 students participate in the 59th annual WGFA 5th and 6th grade Iroquois County Spelling Bee. 59 years, that's a lot. 17 5th and 6th graders from Ford and Iroquois counties took part in the 59th annual WGFA 5th and 6th grade Iroquois County Spelling Bee last Friday, May 1st. WGFA operations manager and morning show host Justin Bryant emceed the event and read the words to the students. He was assisted by WGFA General Manager Stacy Smith. Also sponsoring the event is the Ford Iroquois Retired Teachers Association. Co-directors of the event representing the FIRTA were Liz Martin and Jody Munsterman. This was Martin's second year to co-direct the event. She retired from Crescent Iroquois, CUSD 249, in December of 2019, having taught junior high language arts there for more than 20 years. Needless to say, she has administered many spelling bees. She believes correct spelling enhances effective communication. Currently, Martin teaches in Crescent City as well as Watsika Unit 9 schools. Munsterman is a 1982 graduate with an education major. She began her teaching career in the 1982-83 school year, retiring at the end of the 2020-21 year. Judges for the event were Paula Williamson, Rhonda Coleman, Cheryl Geiger. Williamson began her career as a Watsika Unit 9 substitute teacher. After earning her degree, she became a fifth grade teacher for the Paxton Buckley Lota schools for 21 years. She entered her career in the Bourbonnais school system, substituting K-5. Coleman was a student who always tried her hardest on her weekly spelling tests. She taught 23 years at Cisna Park Schools, primarily fifth grade. She is now retired but steps into the classroom as a substitute teacher and gives spelling tests on occasion. She and her husband Randy live on a farm north of Crescent City. They have 3 children and 5 grandchildren. Geiger is a retired educator of the Watsika Unit 9 district, where she taught first grade for 24 years. That would total to more than 850 Friday morning spelling tests that she administers. Wow. She was also the 1976 grade spelling bee candidate from Glen Raymond Junior High and fondly remembers participating in the county bee on the radio and still remembers the word she missed, congenial. Whew! This year's contestants were Billy Phelan, 5th grade, Jace Hearn, 6th grade, Glen Raymond School, Watsika, Luke Heron, 6th grade, Colt Howe, 5th grader, St. Paul's Lutheran School of Woodworth, Carter Robinson, 5th grade, Crescent City School, Alia Marquez, 6th grade, and Hudson Dodd, 5th grade, from Cisna Park Elementary. Easton Handy, 6th grade, making his second appearance, and Temperance Schunk, 5th grade, both from the Milford Grade School. Ben Harwood, 6th grade, and Kinley Bone, 5th grader, both from J.L. Nash Middle School. Haley Nitch, 6th grade, and Tabitha Harkins, 5th grade, both from Iroquois West Elementary. Henry Westland, 6th grade, making his second appearance, and Colt Lemeniger, 5th grade, both from St. John's Lutheran School, Buckley, and Jade Jones, 6th grade, making her second appearance, and Sophia Carter, 5th grade, both from Donovan Elementary. And I apologize if I've mispronounced any of those names. Prior to the actual spelling bee, Liz Martin read the rules on air, and the spellers finished a practice round. In the first round, each student spelled his or her word correctly and advanced to the second round. In the second round, Ali Marcus missed edible, and Ben Harwood misspelled necessary. Tabitha Harkin missed instrument, and Sophia Carter misspelled pamphlet. 13 spellers went into the third round, but 3 more were eliminated. Luke Heron missed knuckle, Hudson Dodd misspelled porcupine, and Eston Handy missed viaduct. The fourth round saw the elimination of 2 more students. Jace Hearn missed pendulum, and Colt Howe missed particular. Of the 8 spellers going Of the 8 spellers going into the 5th round, only one, Jade Jones, was eliminated when he misspelled confidential. One more student, Temperance Schunk, was eliminated in the 6th round as she missed campaign. All 6 spellers, Billy Phelan, Colt Lemeniger, Carter Robinson, Kinley Bone, Haley Nietzsche, and Henry Westland, advanced. In round 8, Billy Phelan missed specimens, and Colt Lemeniger missed capacity. 4 entered round 10, but only one, Haley Nietzsche, was eliminated with the misspelling of courteous. All 3 spellers, Carter Robinson, Kinley Bone, and Henry Westland, made it through the 10th round. As the 11th round started, Carter Robinson was eliminated with the misspelling of asparagus. In round 12, Kinley spelled ruffian correctly, but Henry Westland missed lacquer. When Kinley also missed lacquer, they went into the 13th round. Westland missed competition. That's ironic. And so did Bone. Bone missed aluminum, which Henry spelled correctly. Westland then spelled licorice correctly to secure his Spelling Bee championship for the 2nd consecutive year. The top 5 spellers were Henry Westland first, Kinley Bone second, Carter Robinson third, Haley Nitch 4th, and Colt Lemeniger 5th. WGFA provided the trophies and a pair of Indiana Beach tickets to each contestant. Each contestant also received a small stipend and certificate from the FIRTA. And now from school kids to caregivers. Caregivers are invited to a monthly support group. Caregivers are invited to join Uplifted Care for the monthly caregiver support group May 13th from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the Uplifted Care Community Grief Center in Bourbonnais. Those who are a family caregiver know that the role comes with a unique mix of joy and heartache, fulfillment and stress. You are not alone on this complex path, according to information provided. Uplifted Care understands the ups and downs of caregiving, and this caregiver support group is designed to provide support, understanding, and expert advice each month. This month's speaker will be Amanda Foltz from Catholic Charities. Amanda will join us to share some of the excellent resources available through Catholic Charities to help provide support for caregivers. They have many programs and services available to help caregivers navigate caring for their loved ones with serious illnesses in both home and facility settings. Please come ready with any specific questions you may have and see if Catholic Charities may have a program to help assist. Light lunch and refreshments will be served. To ensure adequate materials are prepared, please RSVP for this event by calling 815-939-4141. The business side of Death Grief Support Workshop Series is planned. Part 2 of the series, focused on estate planning, will be held on Saturday, May 16th, from 10 to 11:30 a.m. at the Uplifted Care Community Grief Center. There are often a lot of, quote, business-related tasks that accompany the death of a loved one that families may not be aware of. Join us for this informative three-part series that helps break down some of the common legal, financial, and other business-related things people experience when they have lost someone close to them, and learn how to best navigate these experiences. All workshop materials and light refreshments will be provided. Registration is required to attend. To register for this free grief workshop, or for more information on all our grief support services, please call today at 815-939-4141. Uplifted Care Community Grief Center offers something for everyone at any stage of their grief journey. All services are completely free of charge. Please see our full list of support groups and the schedule below. Grief support groups are held weekly, unless noted below. So here's the schedule. Mondays, loss of a parent or sibling, 10 a.m. Finding your new normal, 10 a.m. Grief walk and talk, 12 p.m. And you meet at Perry Farm, weather permitting. Tuesdays, women's grief group, 10 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. Spousal loss, 4 p.m. to 5:30 p.m. Wednesdays, spousal loss, 10 a.m. Moving through grief yoga, 10 a.m., the third Wednesday of each month. Child loss, 4 p.m., the first and third Wednesday of each month. Pregnancy infant loss, the second and fourth Wednesday of the month. Thursdays, grief book club, fourth Thursday each month. Saturdays, monthly kids hour, 12 p.m., third Saturday of each month. January, February, March, April, May, June, July, August, and November. All groups are completely free of charge and registration is required. To register for free support group or for more information on all our grief support services, once again, please call our office at 815-939-4141. Well, I for one didn't know this, but May is Women's Health Month. So here's an article having to do with the role of dairy products in women's health from the teenage years to menopause. May is Women's Health Month, a time to highlight the important role of nutrition plays in supporting women at every stage of life. From the teenage years through menopause and beyond, nutrient needs shift, but one thing remains consistent: building and maintaining strong bones, muscles, and overall health require a steady foundation of key nutrients. Dairy foods such as milk, yogurt, and cheese provide a unique package of calcium, vitamin D, high-quality protein, and other essential nutrients that support women's health across the lifespan, said Monica Nyman, senior nutrition educator and registered dietitian with St. Louis District Dairy Council. The foundation for lifelong bone health begins early. Nearly 90% of peak bone mass is built by the late teen years, making adolescence a crucial time for calcium and vitamin D intake. However, many teen girls fall short of meeting recommended calcium levels. Milk, yogurt, and cheese provide calcium, phosphorus, and protein, which all work together to build strong bones. Establishing consistent dairy habits during these years can help reduce the risk of osteoporosis later in life. During the childbearing years, women's bodies require adequate protein and essential nutrients to support overall health, and during pregnancy, fetal growth and development. Dairy foods provide high-quality protein with all 9 essential amino acids and are a major source of iodine in the American diet, a nutrient important for thyroid function and fetal growth. Simple additions to meals such as yogurt, a yogurt parfait at breakfast, or a smoothie made with milk can help women meet their daily nutrient needs. As women enter their 30s and 40s, maintaining muscle mass becomes increasingly important. Women naturally begin to lose muscle with age, and adequate protein intake combined with strength-building activity can help preserve lean body mass. Dairy protein contains leucine, an amino acid that helps stimulate muscle protein synthesis. Including protein-rich foods at meals, especially breakfast, may also support steady energy levels and appetite control throughout the day. During perimenopause and menopause, declining estrogen levels can accelerate bone loss, increasing the risk of osteoporosis. Adequate calcium, vitamin D, and protein become an even more important to help slow this process. In addition, nutrients found in milk, such as potassium, support healthy blood pressure, an important consideration since heart disease remains the leading cause of death among women. By incorporating nutrient-rich dairy foods as part of a balanced eating pattern, women can take meaningful steps to support strength, vitality, and long-term health at every stage of life. Visit www.stldairycouncil.org for more information on the health benefits of dairy. You may also contact Monica Nyman at 309-681-4629 or mnyman at stldairycouncil.org. The St. Louis District Dairy Council, or the SLDDC, is a nonprofit nutrition education organization funded by local dairy farmers. Since 1932, the SLDDC has served 131 counties in central, southern Illinois, and eastern Missouri as the go-to educational resource and advocate for the role of dairy foods as part of a healthful diet. As the nutrition education people, we are proud to spread knowledge to local communities, bridging the gap between local dairy farmers and consumers. And let's end with today's smile. Each month, 2 Crescent City grade school students are chosen as Students of the Month as recognition for their strong leadership, good behavior, high character, good attendance, self-control, display of responsibility, and positive attitude. Each honoree receives a token for a free book from the GCGS Julie Dunn Library Book Vending Machine, a name plaque for their desks, a gift card to Casey's, and a certificate. The program is sponsored by Tim Santafort of Country Financial Watsika. April's Students of the Month were Hadley Hicks and second grade student of Kristen Marquis, and Marley Keller, a fourth grade student of Tonya Wengert. And that's it for today. I hope you all have a lovely rest of the week and a fine weekend.